on CBS Sports Radio.
What's cracking? Welcome to the program. I am Jim Rome. I'm live in Southern California. It is great to have you here. Again, the program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Telephone number is toll-free nationwide and in Canada, 1-800-636-8686. Your phone call is coming up shortly, but as promised, I'm really eager to do this one. We are joined by a mathematician, a retired NFL player, a two-time first-team All-Big Ten player at Penn State, a doctoral candidate in applied mathematics at MIT. He started two playoff games for the Ravens while simultaneously completing a paper on graph eigenfunctions. The first guest in the history of this program to have a theorem named after him, and he is the author of Mind and Matter, A Life in Math and Football, which comes out tomorrow. John Urschel is my guest. Wow, John, that's quite an intro. Great to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I have to say, that's the best intro I've ever gotten in my life.
Well, man, that's amazing. I appreciate you saying that. But then again, I've never spoken to anybody who had a resume quite like that. So why don't we jump in? You've published a couple of papers in academic journals, but you wrote this book with Louisa Thomas, and the book comes out tomorrow. So let me start right there, John. What's it like for the two of you today on the eve of this book going out into the world? Is it exciting? Is it nerve-wracking? Or is it something else?
Oh, we're just so excited. I mean, we put so much of ourselves in this, and we're really looking forward to it coming out and seeing how people like it. I mean, it's really my story, so you know, I'm very attached to it, and I hope people enjoy learning about my football experiences, but also my journey with mathematics.
Now, John, you've said that you initially wanted to write a book about math, but your publisher said that if you want to share your love of math and reach people at the same time, you can't only write about math. So how'd you go about approaching this project?
The way I approached it is really the way that my life worked when I was, you know, when I was playing football and doing math at the same time. It's sort of looking at these two seemingly disjoint things and how they relate and how I grew in both of these areas at the same time.
Now, your mother,
not one without the other, you know?
Right. I was going to say, John Urschel, my guest, your mother plays an enormous role in this story. She grew up in Cincinnati. Her father had a GED. Her mother stopped after middle school, but she went to college. How do you explain that, and what did you learn from her about having a vision and going after it?
First of all, she's my biggest role model in the world. Her, you know, like you said, her parents had to stop education early for, you know, for real reasons. Her mother had to stop in the segregated South, and she decided that she wanted something better for herself, and she valued education. She was a good student, and that was such a great influence for me, because when I was growing up, my mother always told me that if I wanted to be great at something, if I wanted to do something, the only thing that would hold me back was either a lack of talent, a lack of work ethic, or bad luck. It would never be the household I was born into or the color of my skin. And she did a fantastic job raising me. She saw I was good at math, and she jumped on it.
John Urschel is a mathematician, also a former NFLer. Now, you made the point that your mom loved puzzles. She loved problem solving. So what was it like for you growing up as her son? How much did you get bitten by the puzzles and problem solving bug yourself?
Oh, I was bitten hard, man. I'm telling you, like most kids, you know, for allowance, they're doing dishes, they're mowing the lawn. My form of allowance was doing math calculations in the grocery store.
Wow. That is different. That's great. Now, one of the things you've talked about is the fact that she wanted you to be an engineer. However, not just any kind of engineer, an aerospace engineer. Why was that the vision?
She wanted me to be a rocket scientist. I mean,
literally.
My mom, she didn't go into sort of a STEM field. And as far as she knew, in her mind, the most brilliant, amazing thing someone can do if they're good at math and physics is be a rocket scientist. And she thought this was the most amazing thing. When I got to college, I really found myself more fascinated with mathematics than engineering. I always found myself asking the question, why rather than how? And I have to say, I'm very happy with my choice.
John Urschel joining us. You know, John, we kind of touched on this, but that whole question or notion of nature versus nurture. And then you write this piece for the New York Times that when you were growing up, you thought that math class was something to be endured, and that a teacher told your mother that you were, quote, slow, and that you should repeat a grade. First of all, how is that even possible? And what were you like as a student when you were growing up?
Yeah, as a student, I was often disinterested in math class, mainly because, you know, I already knew all of it. And when I was very little, they thought I had a learning issue because I wasn't paying attention in class, I wasn't really answering questions, and they thought, you know, they thought I had a mental disability. They wanted to hold me back a grade and put me in sort of a special class. So my mom forces them to test me, and my test scores are off the chart, and now all of a sudden they want to bump me up a grade. So,
all right, so then you that happens. You get to high school, and obviously at that point nobody's questioning your mathematical ability then, but at the same time, were they encouraging it? What was it like then?
In high school, first of all, I had great math teachers who, you know, they had a lot on their plate, but I would say that the type of encouragement I got on the football field, where I had my high school coaches telling me, John, you can play college football. John, you should aspire to be the best football you can be. I didn't quite have the same thing from my math teachers, although I had fantastic math teachers. I wish when I was younger, I would have even known what a mathematician was. As crazy as it sounds, I didn't even know what the profession of mathematician was until I got to college. It's hard to want to grow up to be something if you don't even know what that something is or what it looks like.
John Urschel joining us. So now you're talking math and you're talking football. What about football? How did you first get into football, and what did you like about it when you first started playing?
So the reason I started playing football is because my dad played college ball. He played at the University of Alberta, and when I was a kid, I would see photos of him from when he played. And so when I started playing, I absolutely fell in love with it. It turned out that, you know, although I didn't know any technique, you know, I was a little late to the game, I was good at hitting people, and I really liked it. And that goes a long way.
All right, so John Urschel joining us. And then you talked about you didn't understand mathematics per se, or at least the future of a mathematician when you were younger, but it started to change when you got to college. How much did your perception and understanding of mathematics change once you got to college? What was it like then?
It was like a complete 180. The way math is taught in college is very much asking why, asking about understanding rather than sort of here's a formula, now let's use it 20 times and then do it on the exam. And I really enjoyed the idea of understanding why something is a certain way. And that's what I connected with. And once I got to college, my love of mathematics just grew and grew. And when I got to MIT, I think I loved math even more, if that was even possible.
And John, it's interesting because you and I are having this conversation, and I'm trying to find a way to have the conversation and talk about both of these things. I mean, it's not that hard, but we are talking about a couple of things. But you're actually living that life. And if you look at math and you look at football, it would seem like they're on parallel tracks and that you might be living almost a double life. Does it feel that way, or are these two things intertwined?
They definitely feel intertwined. I would say that anybody who's very, very good at two things, I think they'll tell you that the characteristics that make them good at one of the things is the same thing that makes them good at the other. A passion for what they're doing, a drive to be the best, and just an unwavering commitment to whatever your goals and dreams are.
All right, so when people look at you then, they're amazed that you're both an athlete and a mathematician at the highest levels. What do you make of that? For instance, does that feel like an honor, or is there a part of you that says everybody is constantly trying to divide the world into separate categories? Why is it so unusual to be an athlete and a mathematician?
So first of all, it's an honor for me to be able to sort of carry that banner, but I think it's not nearly as unusual as people think it is. I mean, Jim, you've been around NFL locker rooms. You've been around professional sports. There are smart people in professional sports, but you don't always hear about them.
No, it's true. It's not. It's almost made out to be like, John, it's like some intellectual wasteland. That's not the case at all. That's not the case. You don't always hear about them. So when you look at what you've accomplished then, both as an athlete and a mathematician, how much of that, and this goes back to what your mom said, I think, how much of that is about natural ability, John, and how much of that is about grit and toughness and needing both those things in both those fields?
I think you need both of those things. And I'll always be the first one to say I had way more potential in math than I did in football. I was an above average athlete, but I had to work so hard to get where I got to in football, whereas in math I think it came a lot easier.
Did you have a greater passion for either one, or was it just different?
I think it changed from time in my life. In high school, I have to say I was way more passionate about football. In college, when I was at Penn State, both were very equal. By the time I got to MIT, I have to say, math really started winning out.
John Urschel joining us for a few more moments. You know, I'm kind of curious. Like, my son, John, he was, I've got a senior in high school who was, you know, just an average athlete, but he worked really, really hard at it. But he had AP classes and he played baseball. And it always seemed like the coaches didn't really understand the AP classes because it took them away from baseball. And the teachers don't really understand the athletic commitment because the time in the gym took them away from academics. What about your two? Did the two sides understand each other as you were coming up?
Yeah, I think I was really lucky. Okay, in high school, I don't think they understood each other the best, but when I was in college, the Penn State football team, they understood that academics mattered, and they cared about it, and they actually took pride in the things I did with respect to academics. And my math teachers, my professors, they understood that I was doing something really cool on the football field, and they were aware of it, and they respected it as well.
All right, so the book drops tomorrow. Let me quickly ask you this. When you retired from football in 2017, it's the same question, John, of any great athlete, how do you know? And most times you don't know or you don't want to be told. You just want to make sure you go out on your own terms. But how did you know that you were ready to walk away and that that was the right time?
Yeah, it's a tough question to know when, and you can never be sure. But, you know, I had a child coming who's now 16 months old, and I love spending time with her. Things at MIT were really heating up, and I found that I just asked myself, what are the things in this world that I'm most passionate about right now and I'm most excited about? And they were mathematics and raising my daughter and being able to do both of these things for a long time.
You know, you kind of answered my next question because the answer would be both, but I was going to say, you have an amazing mind. So how much of your decision to walk away from your sport was about protecting your brain and how much of it was about your family and your future?
I think they're all intertwined. I think making decisions about spending more time with my daughter or being able to sort of run around with my daughter when I'm 60 or run around with my grandkids or to be able to, you know, still walk and still be able to sort of teach math when I'm 60, all of these things are sort of intertwined. And I'm so blessed to have been able to play 3 years in the league, had amazing experiences, start and play playoff games, you know, against the Patriots, against the Steelers, but also be extremely healthy when I retire.
So, John, one more thought. When Josh Rosen, for instance, was coming out of UCLA last year, one of the knocks on him as a player was, it's incredible to me, but that he might be too smart. What do you make of that? Is there any way that being too smart is a bad thing for a football player?
I mean, I don't know about too smart, but I have to admit that when I came out, people were concerned because I had this other thing I was very good at and very passionate about. And in hindsight, I think it's fair. You know, teams are investing millions and millions of dollars into people. They want to make sure that this is like the main thing that someone's doing. And oftentimes, if football is all someone has, if they don't have anything else, even if they don't have a college degree, there's no question that this person has to do football. And that assurance is, you know, is something that I think teams appreciate.
I would like to reiterate that my guest is a mathematician, a retired NFL player, a two-time first-team All-Big Ten player at Penn State, a doctoral candidate in applied mathematics at MIT, and the author of a book. It's called Mind and Matter, A Life in Math and Football. It comes out tomorrow. John, what is the best way for our listeners to find that book?
Go to your local bookstore. It'll be in stores tomorrow, or just go to Amazon.com and just type in Mind and Matter, A Life in Football, and just click that little order button. It'll be there in 2 days.
Once again, Mind and Matter, A Life in Math and Football. It does come out tomorrow. Look for that. John Urschel, my guest. John, great to get caught up. Good luck with that book. I hope we can talk again soon. That was a lot of fun.
Much appreciated.
You too, John. Much appreciated. Much respect. 1-800-636-8686. A mathematician and retired NFLer. And did play in a couple of playoff games, as he points out. Not only played in a couple of playoff games, but played in a couple of playoff games for the Ravens while simultaneously completing a paper on graph eigenfunctions. All right, then. We are open, still ahead, the following. Scott Frost. Scott Frost is coming up at 40 past this hour. Also still ahead, the Laker fan protest, as imbecilic and idiotic as expected, and even more so. Oh, and they hired a coach. And maybe a coach in waiting. Golden State advances. Steph Curry, scoreless in the first half. If I'd said to you, going into Game 6 in Houston, without Kevin Durant and with Steph Curry, scoreless in the first half, what would you have said? How would that game have ended? And Golden State finds a way to get it done. Houston comes up short once again. And they, I would agree with Ben Galver, who came on and said they're never going to have a better look at it than they did this year. Remember last year was all about, yeah, well, the refs had it in for us. Here's a dossier. Check it out. Yeah, well, if Chris Paul didn't get hurt, we would have won. Yeah, well, Paul didn't get hurt. Kevin Durant did. And they still lost. My thoughts on that in a minute. This tweet is from at M. Piazza's Backknee. I trust the process. And I eat the processed. Regards, Beaks in Futio Edie.
Trust the process.
JC in Calgary tweets, Ward John Urschel, doing the math while I do the Alfredo. Signed, Beaks in Olive Garden City.
Okay, so I've done the math on this never-ending pasta bowl. 42 different sauce and pasta combinations.
Oh, you do the math, I'm doing the Alfredo.
Olive Garden's never-ending pasta bowl. With
hey, morons. Garlic Alfredo. Pick any sauce and pasta. Fat floats.
Fat.
Beaks in Olive Garden City said it himself. Yeah, I guess this is on me. I did suggest that you dumb the show down. And you are. Scott Frost coming up at 40 past. Quick timeout. And I want to talk about the Blazers still. Finding it tougher and tougher to get to the grocery store, right? Let Walmart do it for you instead. Simply make your list, set a time for free pickup or delivery, and then go about your day. Walmart Associates will pick the best items for you, including fresh produce. And get it ready. It is quick, it is easy, it is convenient, with satisfaction guaranteed, or you get your money back. Just download the Walmart grocery app to get started. Use my code, WOWFRESH, WOWFRESH, to get $10 off your first order. It is just a $50 minimum purchase. It does not expire until December 31st, 2019. Small fee applies.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
It is golf's next major, the world's best, the prestigious Wanamaker Trophy. Tiger shooting for back-to-back majors and his 16th overall. It is the PGA Championship, and it is this weekend on CBS. 39 days until the smack-off, and the first set of odds are out. Keep in mind, they are the stuck-nut odds. You know, there have been years past where actual bookmakers or actual betting sites, gambling sites, have had smack off ads, literally. Like you could get down, you could get actual action on the smack off. And I wonder, with the laws being eased now, whether or not somebody else might pick that up. The odds are out. I have not done my take on that yet. I was about to talk about the Blazers because I've said it before and I'll say it again right now. The Portland Trail Blazers are tough as hell. I was eager to get to that because I have Scott Frost coming up next. But Luke, who just showed up on my call screen. The rare clone where I shelve what I was going to do and go right to the call instead. Let's go to Buffalo. Rick in Buffalo. And we are deep in smack-off season now. It's no longer early. We're 39 days out. You're in it. We're right in the middle of it. Let's go to Buffalo. My man, Rick, what's going on?
Everything's going great, Jim. How are you doing?
So good, Rick. Perfect.
Well, I saw Stucknut posted his smack-off odds the other night, and obviously that dope knows nothing about the show. He's got those two Canadian lames going off at 10-1. I wouldn't touch those hacks at 100-1. I've already referenced how pathetic Matt's top 10 list was last year. But Tyler's fit alarm gimmick doesn't get nearly the ridicule it deserves. That thing went over like a wet fart at a funeral. Cue that thing up, Elvy. Clones need to be reminded how historically terrible it was. Now I realize you feel pity for Canada, Jim. So I know you're going to take their smack-off calls. But could you kindly take them back-to-back at the bottom of hour two? That'll give me a chance to drop a nice mid-show deucer and restock the cooler without missing a friggin' thing. And I couldn't believe Caleb in Green Bay opened at 5-1. That's a bigger stretch than that doughboy trying to squeeze into a pair of size 48 Levi's. You got no shot, Webb. Maybe you should just bring your mom on again this year, fat boy. And she can apologize for being such a failure as a parent. In summary, Jim, the stuck nut smack off odds are a complete friggin' joke. And it's no surprise when you consider the source. As a favor to the clones, I'll be tweeting out the real smack off odds a little later in the show. War John Beeline getting a huge payday. He's definitely earned it. War Steve Kerr being just like me, an effing giant who's mastered his craft. Thanks for the vine, Jim. I'm out.
Rock him! Thanks, Rick. He just gets stronger throughout the call. I feel like sometimes, like that time I was at the Super Bowl. You know that time? Last year. I was sick as a dog. Every day on the walkover, Dave Whalen said, or he thought, how's this guy going to do it? He can't even talk. Then I'd slam a cough drop in my face. And then I would get stronger as the day went on. That was Rick in that call. Like a locomotive going downhill. Good job. My man does not like being plus 800. He did not like being 8-1. The stuck nut odds, I've not gotten there yet, but he jumped in. And Rick said the real odds will come out later on in the program. The odds that he drops. I agreed with almost everything he said. Generally, I agree with a lot of things that Rick says and what he does. The only thing that I disagree with is when he said, what's that dope know about this show? Stucknut? That dope knows more about the show than I do. And I host the show. Oh no, Stucknut knows quite a bit about the show. Stucknut has been documenting and archiving and been the jungle historian for the better part of 20 years. My man knows everything about this show. He knows more about the show than the XR4TI combined would ever know about the show. Believe me, if something slips my mind about the show, where do you think I go? To Alvy? Sure. But only after I go to the nut. But Rick's not cool with the odds. Hey, we'll find out. You know how odds are, right? The best team does not always win. The best caller generally does win, though. And that's why Brad's been unbeatable of late. That's why Leff was so tough to beat. Unless your take is that Leff is, quote, a gimmicky little bitch. But even without the gimmicks, he has shown up strong. When we return, I'm sure some reaction to Rick in Buffalo, as always. Are you team Rick? Or do you hate Rick? Hate's a strong word. But even if you hate this guy, it's just fuel. He loves it. I think Rick would rather you hate him than love him. He runs on that kind of premium fuel. 1-800-636-8686. All right, as an example of Stucknut. As I mentioned, when I don't know something, where do I go? To Alvin, but first I go to the nut. So, as an example, that dorm room Cal State Fullerton call, I said to Alvin, what year was that? Alvin said, dude, no date.
Dude.
Stucknut has a date. Stucknut knew when that call was. 2005.
With a guy.
I think he even had the month. So, no, that quote, dope, he does know the show. He knows the show really well. He knows things that Alvin and I don't know. When we return, we're talking Nebraska football. Scott Frost joins me next segment. First up, here is a sports update for you.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I am Jim Rome. I said there'd be some reaction to Rick in Buffalo coming in and doing Rick in Buffalo things, and there is, and I will get there. But we are joined right now by the head football coach at Nebraska, entering his second season with the Huskers, 2017 National Coach of the Year. Nebraska won four of their last six last season. They open up this year against South Alabama, August 31st. We are joined by Scott Frost. Scott, so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. How you doing?
Good, good. Scott, great to visit. Let me ask you first, if we were to go back to that spring game, Scott, last month, there were 86,000 people in attendance. I know that's not any surprise to you, but now that you've had a full year as head coach there, how much more do you appreciate the Husker fans and their passion for this program?
Well, everybody thinks they have the best fans in the country. We certainly are convinced of it. Our attendance at spring games would show that, but we're just so grateful for the support we've gotten and are going to continue to get. Our fans are hungry to see us get the program back to a place where we're winning football games and doing it at a good clip. So we couldn't do it without that support, and I think it's unlike most every place in the entire country.
Scott Frost joining us. You know you have that support, and that's great, but it's also great to have the support of the guys who came before. As an example, Amir Abdullah was at the game as an analyst for the Big Ten Network, and he said, quote, "I would have loved to play for Scott Frost. He understands the standard that he's setting here when he walks into the room. You feel the respect that he brings. It's a special thing. You can't say that about every coach," end quote. So what's it mean to you to hear that from a former Husker like Amir?
Well, Amir's one of the greats to play here. A lot of the guys have reached out to me. Nebraska's had an unbelievable list of great players, and we got those guys behind us. And really, we're just working every day to try to build a program that's going to make them proud. And Amir's one example, and Dominican Sue's been in contact. I've seen Mike Rozier and Irving Fryer and Grant Wistrom and Amon Green, and I know we got all those guys' support, and those were the guys that helped build it. I think a lot of the guys that we have back in this building understand what made Nebraska great. Nebraska's a unique place, and we're going to try to do a lot of the things that made Nebraska the best program in the country for a long time.
We're talking Nebraska football head coach Scott Frost is my guest. Scott, one more thing about Amir. He also raved about the fact that he and some of the other guys were working out in the weight room, and then you jumped into the bench press. What was that moment like for you and for the guys who were there? What happened?
I don't remember that other than I try to work out still. Boyd Epley was a strength coach when I was here. He had a good team. They got me really strong, and some of it's still there because of old man strength.
I knew you weren't going to make that about you, Scott. They were raving about it. So Amir and Rex Burkhead were among a number of NFL players who were in attendance, and you made the point that they received a huge cheer from the fans. I'm curious, how much of that is about what they did on the field, and then how much of that is about what these guys represented at Nebraska and how much they love being at Nebraska?
Well, Nebraska people love the football players, and they love them all, but especially the guys that do things the right way on and off the field. If you're that type of guy, you become a superhero or a rock star or some combination of the two while you're here, and it really lasts your whole life. So seeing those guys walk back on the field and hearing the applause for them was pretty special for me. I know it was really special for them, and that's the kind of reception you get when you did things the right way at the university.
All right, so then having said that, when you're recruiting right now and you're looking for players, how much are you looking for sheer ability, and then how much are you looking for guys that do it the right way and will carry the flag for Nebraska?
You have to find both, and I actually think that the process kind of selects those players for us. We're certainly looking for the right type of character kid and a tough kid that wants to come to Nebraska. But really, with all the choices out there in college football, the type of kid that's going to choose Nebraska and come to Lincoln is usually the kid that's really serious about it, that recognizes what we're trying to build, that wants to be a part of something special, that wants to focus on what's important, and that's football and school and life after football. There's a lot of easier choices. I think the kids that make this choice are the right type of kids that want to be here for the right reason.
Nebraska head football coach Scott Frost is my guest. Scott, in terms of that process, I wonder how much of that, the thing we're talking about right now, was on your mind when you came back to Nebraska and you made the walk-on program a priority once again?
Well, the walk-on program was a big part of what Coach Devaney and Coach Osborne built here. We're going to do everything we can to get the majority of that back. I think it'll be another year or so before we really start to see the benefits of it. But, we're not just taking walk-ons just to be out at practice and be scout team guys for us. We're going to develop them the same way that we try to develop our scholarship guys. And a lot of those guys are going to end up being players and starters for us down the road. So There's a lot of good players in Nebraska. There's a lot of good players in the Midwest. We've gotten a bunch of those guys to come walk on, and they're in the weight room and on the field working right now. It won't be very long before those guys are helping us win games.
Scott Frost joining us. So, Scott, last season didn't get off to the start that you would have liked, but you won four of your last six, and two games that you lost were by single digits on the road at Ohio State and Iowa. So how much did the team and the program grow over the course of that last season?
You know, growth is the right word for it, Rome. We had a lot of growth that we had to go through to get where we wanted to get. We're still not there, but I saw a transformation on the team as the year went along. We couldn't have beat almost anybody in the country at the beginning of the year because we were going to find a way to beat ourselves or to give up the plays that we couldn't give up if we wanted to win. By the end of the year, we were battling and playing together and loving each other and kind of had the culture built that we're looking for. And that led to a lot of close games and some that we won and some more that we could have won. I think the encouraging thing for me is, you know, Ohio State was a great team and we played them close. Certainly had every chance to beat Northwestern. Those two teams were in the Big Ten Championship. We were nowhere near where I want to be as a football program last year, and by the end of the year, we were still competitive with the best teams in this league. So I think that's a sign that there's good things to come.
Scott Frost joining us. Something else that you didn't mention, but I will. You averaged nearly 37 points per game over the final six, and you had seven straight games of 450 yards or more, which was a first in school history. So the foundation is being built. Now, when you mention culture, man, Scott, that comes up with almost every single coach I talk to on this program now, regardless of sport, it always comes up. How would you define the culture that you want to see in your program?
You know, it does. I think coaches talk about it probably too much, and it gets to be cliche, but it's true. If you got the right type of attitudes in your locker room and on the field, it's going to lead to wins. If you don't have it, it really doesn't matter how much talent you have. If I really had to summarize what we're trying to build here, it's that I want our kids to feel like they're part of something that's bigger than themselves. Life, football, everything's about sacrifice. It's not about what can I get for me. It's about how can I contribute to a team or something that's bigger than myself. And if we get a bunch of guys thinking and doing things with that type of attitude and the team in mind first, we're going to win more games than we're going to lose.
So any idea, how long does that take, and are you starting to see that culture take root?
Yeah, it really flipped last year about midway through the season. We lost a tough game to Purdue. I had several of the team leaders and captains come up into my office right after that game and tell me they were going to demand change. And really that's when everything flipped. I think in the locker room, the kids that wanted to do things the right way and that group started to win out over the group that was resisting. And that's really when we became a better team and were competitive in our league. And we've just been upward and onward from there. You're never all the way there with culture. It's constant gardening. It's stuff you have to do every day, just like parents have to try to teach their kids something new every day and keep them moving in the right direction. It's something we're always working on, but we're in a lot better place right now than we were 12 months ago.
Scott Frost joins me for a couple of more moments. So, Scott, when you were at UCF, the team made a huge breakthrough in the second season. I understand that every single situation is totally different, but when you look back at UCF, what signs did you see that a breakthrough was about to take place, and are you seeing any of those same signs at Nebraska right now?
Yeah, it's very similar tracks, Rome. It's interesting as you're trying to build a program. We really didn't know that success was going to come and didn't feel it coming until probably fall camp of that second year. Some pieces fell right for us. Some things happened that we needed to have happen to have a complete team. And everything just took off from there. We really thought down there it was going to be a three-year deal. We thought in our third year, which would have been last season, that was going to be our year, and things just happened a little quicker than we thought. But we're looking for a jump this year. I know there's a lot of high expectations outside of the program. There's a lot of high expectations in this building for what we can accomplish. We got some of the right pieces. We're certainly not a complete team yet, but we're way down the road from where we were 12 months ago, and I would love to see the same type of leap forward happen in year two here.
Scott Frost, my guest. Scott, earlier this year, your outside linebackers coach, Javon DeWitt, was diagnosed with throat cancer. What was your reaction when you heard that news, and how have you and the players rallied around him?
you know, he's just starting to get back involved again. He was in my office this morning. Things look like they're going really well for him. So, you know, our prayers are with him, and we're going to do everything we can for him. You know, one of the first messages, I learned this from Tony Dungy, one of the first messages I give the team every year is we all love football, and football is important, but football isn't life. And when things like this happen, it helps you realize that there's as much time as we spend on football and trying to win games, it's not the most important thing. And I think when you're coming from that point and you understand that, I think it makes you even better player, even better coach, and even better team. So we're going to try to keep our priorities in place, and trying to help Javon through this is certainly something that's going to keep us grounded.
Scott Frost, my guest. And a final thought, Scott. I mean, nobody knows that program, I don't think, like you know that program. You played there. You starred there. You know the state. You know everything involved. Is there, now that you're in this thing for like a year plus, is there anything maybe now that you know about the job that maybe you didn't know when you first got back?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I saw how the program was run when it was run the right way, and we were winning. And to be honest with you, I didn't know how far from that it had gone. We've got it back on the right railroad tracks, and we're covering some ground here. But a lot of the things that I loved about the program are still the same. The people of Nebraska are its best asset. The type of help that you get, the type of support we have here, the type of resources we have here, that's all in place. So it's just up to us to start running the program in a lot of the same ways that it was run for 30 years when Nebraska was winning games at a clip that nobody else in the country could match.
It's a great state. It's a great program. Scott Frost is the head coach. He's entering his second season there. He was the 2017 National Coach of the Year. They wrapped up last season by winning four of their last six. They open up this season, August 31st, against South Alabama. Scott, I appreciate you and the conversation as always. Thanks so much.
Man, always great to be on. Good luck.
You too, Scott. Good luck. Great talking to you. Nebraska football has long been a topic on this program, dating all the way back to my appearance there when they were ripping off national championships. One of my first out-of-state appearances ever in the jungle was to Nebraska. And for those of you who were there that day, you know, I would say, yeah, great, Rome. Like, who's listening that was there that day? Can I tell you, when I went to Madison, Wisconsin last week, there were a number of people at the event that I went to, Greg Gard's event, that said to me, Rome, I was at the tour stop that day. And it wasn't just one of those things like where they were talking bull. Like, they were saying things like, hey, Rome, remember when you said this at the tour stop that day? I never forgot that you said this. I guarantee there are people listening right now in Nebraska that were at the show that I did where inside people were chanting, outside sucks, outside sucks. And then they rolled in. The Peter Bros, Jared Tomich, and who was the other? It was not Grant Wistrom. Hey, Stucknut, who am I forgetting? Jason and Christian Peter, Jared Tomich. Damn. There's a jungle moment for you right there. Anyway, the person who comes up with that guy wins nothing. Anyway, Nebraska football has long been a topic on this program. I'll never forget when we first started to add affiliates in Nebraska, in and around Nebraska. And we were probably, I want to say, I don't know, 20 affiliates in maybe. And the hazing process was deep, man. It was intense. And I thought, Nebraska is not ready for this. And again, understand the world, right? There was no internet. There was no social media. The world was not connected the way it is right now. Nebraska came in and got punched in the face. And I thought to myself, this is not going to go well. And Nebraska stood in and just started trading haymakers in the middle of the ring. And I'm like, this is already my favorite state in the country. Nebraska is amazing. And then when I went there, they were literally the nicest people I'd ever met in my life. And Nebraska football was killing it. That was a good time. Question is, can it be like that ever again? Can Scott Frost make it like that ever again? We'll pick that topic up next hour. And a lot more. Open phones the rest of the way. 1-800-636-8686. Thoughts on the early smack-off odds. Rick in Buffalo has already jumped in. and said he's not happy with that at all. All that still ahead. Do not go anywhere.